One, please.
Item number one from the Office of the District Attorney, providing a verbal presentation on the Witness Protection Program. This item is informational only and thus otherwise directed by the committee.
Thank you. As is the tradition of this committee, we'd like to start out these meetings with what's going on positively in our community, in our building, in our county government. And today we are joined by representatives from the District Attorney's Office, and we thank you. Gentlemen, I'll let you introduce yourselves. I know that you've got a presentation for us, but I also, if you could introduce your team that's here too.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, supervisors, staff. My name is David Buddy. I'm the Chief Investigator at the District Attorney's Office. I'm accompanied by Deputy District Attorney Patrick Kenny, who's been with the office for about 35 years. He's in charge of our sexual assault unit, various units at Children's Court, the domestic violence unit, and some other units that he will talk about when he gives his part of the presentation. I'm also accompanied by Deputy Chief Investigator Tom Belke, who is in charge of our witness protection program, and two of our witness protection analysts, Amy Legue and Danielle Merton-Zovic.
Welcome.
If I could just briefly talk about their backgrounds a little bit. Tom came from the Milwaukee Police Department. He's been in law enforcement for about 39 years. He had over 25 years at the Milwaukee Police Department. He also worked as a police aide there. He's headed our witness protection program for the last couple of years. Amy is going to be graduating in May from Marquette with a degree in criminology and law studies. She's been with us since January 2010. And Danielle has been with us since August of last year, and she's studying for a degree in police criminal justice at UWM this fall. The analysts actually listen to jail tapes and do a very, very important job for us. These are hourly workers. They average about 19 hours a week, and these are positions that you as the board have staffed for us and funded for us, and we appreciate that very much. Just to give you one quick case, to give you an example of how these positions are integrated into our office. In February of this year, there was an investigation started on an individual with the last name of McGowan. And he had a long criminal record. He had threatened to kill his victim with a loaded gun, his girlfriend. Once he was charged, he proceeded to continue to do intimidating behavior, including phone calls. And in the phone calls, it was determined that he'd sent threatening letters to his girlfriend. Based on the work of these analysts, listening to hundreds of hours of calls and picking out the nuggets of what's important, they're able to make a referral to our investigators, who can then get a search warrant or do other things to follow up to get physical evidence or to put the calls into a criminal complaint, for example. The investigators went to the victim's home and, with the cooperation of the victim, got the letters that were telling the victim not to come into court. The victim did come to court and sadly testified that she did not remember. Everything she said in court was, "I don't remember." And this is sometimes, a sad fact with these kinds of cases. Despite that, we were able to convict the person of 6 of 7 counts because of the jail calls, his own voice, and the letters, his own handwriting. And that sort of stuff would not have happened without the work of the analysts and the witness protection investigators. The board graciously gave us 2 more for this year, so that his whole unit will be a total of 6 investigators. So I also sent over some statistics. I don't want to bore everybody. You've had these to review. If you have questions about them, I can certainly talk about it. But the percentage of referrals has been steady around 20% every year since the program started in 2009. And again, I thank the board for funding us in 2009. It was a cooperative effort with the board and the state. We got some grant money. We started small, and we've grown from there. The percentage of domestic violence referrals is now averaging about 50% of all the cases that the Witness Protection Program handles. So it's a very, very key part of their work. And last year, our arrests were 93, which is pretty significant for a unit of just 6 people targeting this sort of stuff. I'd just like to also highlight in today's paper, you may have seen the article, Milwaukee domestic violence victim was beaten before, and this is a woman, a Southside woman, was shot in van, ex-boyfriend, then killed self. This is the kind of thing that we're talking about, and this unit works on cases like that to try and prevent that. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to Mr. Kenny.
Oh, thank you. Please.
Good morning. As Mr. Buddy mentioned, I'm Deputy District Attorney Pat Kenny. I've been working in the District Attorney's Office for over 35 years. My responsibilities include the supervision of the Domestic Violence Unit, the Sensitive Crimes Unit, which is the prosecution of sex crimes, the Sexual Predator Unit, the Child Advocacy and Protection Unit, which is the adult prosecution of child abuse and child neglect. I also have the unit at Children's Court, the Children in Need of Protection and Services, the Termination of Parental Rights Unit, and the prosecution of sex offenses at the Juvenile Court Center. So it's a little over a third of the district attorney's office. You mentioned at the outset this morning that you wanted to begin this morning with a positive program. Well, I can tell you from my perspective that you could not have picked a better program from the standpoint of our office. I've been working, as you well know, in our office for many, many years, and I literally had to go back to the very earliest days of working in our office when we first hired counselors for sexual assault victims to recall a greater improvement in the criminal justice system than has been this program for victims and witnesses of crime. This has been a tremendous improvement for the system. And it isn't just a story that can be told by the accumulation of arrests and convictions, although that is certainly a big part of the picture. I see daily people who work with Tom Belter walk through the halls of this system, these buildings, with witnesses and victims next to them, knowing that they would not be here but for not only the physical support but the emotional support that is provided by the people who work with Dave and who work in this unit. We have judges in the system, prosecutors, police officers from different jurisdictions throughout the county, federal and state police officers. It's all meaningless if witnesses are afraid to come to court to testify. Simply meaningless. It's just a house of cards unless they are going to cooperate. Now, other police agencies have attempted to do this work. I think because of the unique paradigm of having the unit in the district attorney's office, it has been much more successful than any other group that's ever attempted to do this kind of work. They have daily contact with the prosecutors. They have daily contact with the process servers who are looking for individuals to serve subpoenas. They have daily contact with our victim witness advocates who've had frequent contact not only with witnesses and victims, but many times the relatives of the victims and witnesses who are involved in our system. That seamless communication within our office makes them an extremely effective tool to support victims and witnesses. With respect to the jail tapes, a critically important function of this unit, which I congratulate you on your support and thank you for your support of that unit, has been incredibly important because there are certain legal aspects to their work that make it critically important to obtain information of intimidation, because as I'm sure you all remember from your civics classes, a defendant has a Sixth Amendment right to confront his accusers. But if we can prove that a defendant has been trying to intimidate witnesses, intimidate victims, we can proceed under alternative legal theories. If the victim and witness fail to appear, we can actually get into evidence the statements that they've made that would normally be hearsay, by proving to the court that they have forfeited their right to confront their confront the witnesses in court and use hearsay under the legal theory forfeiture by wrongdoing. Now, I have several examples here. I don't know how many you want to hear. I can certainly give you some sense of the kind of work that they do. In the Gary Salam case, Gary Salam was a convicted felon. He drove by the victim, his former girlfriend, who was pregnant, her sister and her sister's friend, and they were simply walking across a bridge in Milwaukee County. He fired numerous shots at all three of them from a handgun and then fled the scene. He then called the victim's mother to convey a threat to the victim. he wouldn't miss next time. He remained on the run for an extensive period of time, working with the FBI and the Milwaukee Police Department. Ultimately, he was arrested. But while he was in custody and charged with first-degree recklessly endangering safety and felon in possession of a firearm, this fine unit located several jail calls. They were talking in code, but it was sufficiently clear from the calls that the defendant was telling the victim not to appear. And in fact, the victim did not appear. However, the people who work with WITSEC, the officers who are assigned, the investigators, they found the victim literally hiding beneath a blanket in a residence and brought her to court. The investigation of the jail calls led to the seizure of certain letters that were mentioned in the jail calls, and the letters ultimately resulted in additional evidence that these letters contained intimidating information that that the defendant was hoping would prevent this prosecution from going forward. Ultimately, even though the victim did not want to appear, even though one other of the three witnesses failed to appear, WITSEC again searching, located all of the witnesses using the jail calls, the letters. Mr. Salam was convicted in a case where a few years ago, what would have happened is the victim wouldn't appear and the case would get dismissed. Instead, an individual with a lengthy criminal record is going to go to prison. He hasn't been sentenced yet for decades. I have a couple other examples, and I'm not sure how much time you want to take with these examples, but I can give you numerous additional examples of people with substantial criminal records, with violent histories, especially violent histories involving domestic abuse, that have been critically important.
Sure, please. Mr. Kenney, at least one more, please.
The case of Andrew Jackson. He was had a chronic history as a violent domestic violence offender. There was a warrant issued for him for battery and domestic abuse. While the warrant was outstanding, he came to the victim's residence in front of her children, attacked the victim with a knife, almost severing both of her arms, then threw boiling water with oil on her, creating severe burns to her head, upper body, torso, and arms. He fled the residence, leaving the children alone with a person who was otherwise about ready pretty much to bleed to death. Fortunately, her younger daughters called 911, which led to emergency medical treatment, which saved her life. The defendant was charged with first-degree reckless injury, aggravated battery, first-degree recklessly endangering safety, and once again, the victim, fearing for her safety, failed to appear when she was subpoenaed. With encouragement from WITSEC, she ultimately voluntarily appeared, but she refused to testify. Once again, evidence of jail calls led to evidence that he was threatening this victim, that he was attempting to intimidate this victim. And we, using that information, the information obtained from these individuals who monitor these jail calls, and this is tedious work, hard work, but they have been very effective in finding critical evidence. The defendant, for example, in one instance, told the victim that she was to tell her daughter that she was to lie in the witness stand, or to say that she didn't see anything, when in fact her daughter had witnessed this vicious attack on her mother. The defendant also tried to persuade the victim to go down south. All of these jail calls were located by these very excellent investigators. Ultimately, once again, the victim failed to appear for a trial date. It had to be adjourned. But we argued in court, based upon the fine information that they obtained, that he had forfeited his right to confront his accuser, that he had that by his wrongdoing, that the hearsay statements that she originally had given to the police and that her daughter had originally given to the police should be admissible in court against him, along with all of the medical evidence that we had. And when the court granted that motion, the defendant, in fact, pled guilty and was sentenced to over 20 years in prison, a case that would otherwise have been dismissed without their fine work.
Well, thank you. Questions, comments?
Mr. Chairman, I was a child welfare worker for 11 and a half years, and the work that they that I'm hearing is very valuable because we've had domestic violence cases in the child welfare system, and I greatly appreciate what I've heard. I want to thank you all for the valuable work that you do.
Thank you.
Mr. Buddy, Mr. Kenny, the rest of the team that's here, first of all, thank you for an amazing presentation. I think, speaking for myself, you know, you sit in the office and you take constituent calls and, you know, maybe you complain a little bit about angry constituents or whatever, but the work that and the environment that you all deal with is amazing. So thank you not only for the presentation, but thank you for your fine work. And keep it up. Keep up the good work.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you.